if you are not swearing at your characters and yelling at your screen, then maybe you're doing something right and we are doing something wrong. But
The other thing you're likely to be swearing at is your own brain and as you batter your head against the computer screen.
Yeah, and
Why won't you give me ideas?
Hey there, man.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good. Yourself?
I'm good.
Cool.
Very cool. It's good to be back,
It
right?
really is.
And yes, welcome back, dear listener, to the Right Wing Podcast. My name
Dear
is
listener,
Greg.
you're saying we've only got one now.
Well, we are supposed to talk to one at a time,
Oh, okay. Whoever you are, whichever one we're talking to at this particular moment.
Indeed. My name is Greg.
And I'm Martin.
And we are here to talk about writing. We've been on an involuntary hiatus last week. If you follow the podcast, you know that we missed a week because life got in the way.
It does.
Yes, it does happen. But it also got me thinking that life always gets in the way, and especially with writers who or creative people, but writers as pertains to this podcast, it can be hard to make time to write and to research if you have a job, if you have a family. So Martin, how do you find time to write?
Lately, it's just been a case of squeezing in as much writing as I can in every spare moment. Which, when you've got young children, they are few and far between. But it usually tends to be reasonably late at night. When little one's in bed and. Then I just try and kind of figure out what I can do with the amount of time I've got before I end up crashing myself.
Right. And that's it's when I read blog posts and books about writing and that sort of stuff. It's always, create a routine and plot this and do that. But
kids have no concept of routines, especially yours.
Yeah, exactly. And it can be hard and it can be discouraging because, very few people, at least in my experience, acknowledge that, when you're starting out, writing isn't a full-time job, and even if you become successful, it may not be a full-time job to write what you want. I have been writing, believe it or not, in the last 2 weeks. I got two pieces of poetry out, so I'm
nice.
Pretty excited about that. And two blog posts for my client, which is always fun. But before I start talking too much again, I wanted to ask how is your writing going? If I saw Twitter correctly, it's Malice Unchained for those who want to follow Martin.
Indeed.
You started a new work in progress.
Well, it's sort of kind of maybe yes. As regular fans of the cast will know, I do already have two books out, and they are both the first and second book in a series. And a very small idea flashed into my head the other day for a different way of writing the third book. Because what happened is I'd written the third book and then I hated it because there were a lot of things wrong with it. I didn't have the same motivation for the third one as I did with the second one. So I thought, you know what, this isn't working. Let's go and try something else. Then I started writing my fantasy work in progress for. Got this random idea for a different way of starting at least the third story in my vampire series, and just thought, sod it, I'll sit down and write that out so I don't lose the idea. That's now maybe another work in progress or half a work in progress.
That's nice.
I'm not sure, but yeah, it's there.
I was almost going to interrupt you and saying that you could have really just mix things up, and your first two books would be the, I don't know, first and third book of the trilogy, or you know, second or third, and just confuse people and make some buzz going.
I could have done that if it weren't for the fact that the first one quite clearly introduces a character, and then the second one quite clearly follows directly on from it. So there's no way in hell that the second book I wrote could possibly be the third book in the series. It wouldn't work.
What you're saying is really interesting. Like you said that you wrote the third book, but you hated it, and you instead of trying to edit it, which any person would do, you went at it again from scratch, from another.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a little unfair to say I hated the third book. It's just there was a lot of things that I didn't like about it. There were some good moments in it, some good bits of dialogue, some good bits of description, things like that. But I wasn't happy with how the plot was going. I wasn't happy with how certain things were coming together. Certain bits of it felt a bit disjointed. It felt rushed. I just thought editing this would take so much work, and it would basically be like starting over from scratch. So I may as well just start over from scratch. I've been toying with different perspectives, different people, because the My Vampire series is written in the first person. It's kind of like the memoirs of the people who are involved in the particular storylines. Mm-hmm. So I've toyed with the idea of changing who it is who's talking, just to see if I can actually get a better story out of it.
Right. I was just about to ask, if you don't mind telling what the new angle is. I think there is a value in putting aside something that doesn't seem to be working and just starting over. And I feel that many people are treating their writings as their darlings. Which kind of nicely leads into Hemingway's famous saying about killing your darlings. Obviously, he was talking about the characters, but it applies to your writing itself. If it doesn't work, don't destroy it. Definitely don't destroy it. Never destroy anything, because you never know when it may click and you can make it work again. Walking away from a bad piece of writing, quote unquote, because it's not bad, it's just not working. It's definitely not quitting. It's trying
a new approach.
Yeah, definitely. It's actually the smart move in
I have to say that it wasn't my idea to do that. It was actually the advice of one of my authoring friends. I was very lucky to, well, I am very lucky to have acquired some, you know, really good authors as friends. And I spoke to this person, someone I respected and who I felt could offer me some decent advice because she's been in the business a bit longer than I have. I just said to her, look, you know, these are the problems I'm having. I'm not liking how this book is going, and I just don't know what I'm doing anymore at the moment. She gave me the idea of changing tack, you know, trying from somebody else's perspective. So here I am again.
Well, that's another piece of advice. I mean, we are just full of advice today. I would say that, you know, don't be afraid to walk away from things, and also don't be afraid to ask for help. And
You know,
be honest, like, hey, this doesn't work. And like, writing is so many times is pictured as a solitary thing, but it really isn't. Like, none of us exists in isolation.
Especially with the advent of social media, and there's so many people out there in the writing communities who understand that the one thing we have in common is that we're all writers and that we're all passionate about the craft. And so the best thing we can do is to actually be there and offer advice and support to each other. Yeah.
Yeah, and just cheer each other on. I mean, you know, yeah. when I see people taking to Twitter that they wrote however long stuff, like they wrote 10 words or 10,000 words or whatever, they finished a chapter or something.
Even one word in progress.
Yeah, definitely.
Very, very slow progress, but it's still progress.
Hey, you know, the slowest progress is faster than whatever you are not doing.
Exactly.
I think there is a motivational poster for writers that it goes something like the worst first draft is better than the stuff that you never wrote.
Yeah, that's very true.
It's awesome to connect with other people and yes. Find out that, you know, the mountain that you just can't scale in your work, it's not you. It's not that you are not talented. It's not that you are not good enough. It's that everybody struggles.
And sometimes the main problem is you're looking at it with your own eyes.
Yeah.
That sounds weird to some people, I know, but what I mean to say is that you're looking at it with the eyes of someone who's been struggling with this particular work in progress, who's been trying to hammer it out over however long a period of time. If you get someone else to look at it with you or for you, even if it's just a close friend, a family member, or somebody else within the writing community, and get them to offer you some feedback, sometimes what happens is you find that something you've been really agonizing over actually turns out to not be a big issue at all. And you find you're just so much more confident in carrying on.
And it's especially nice when you see like big famous writers and best-selling authors and those people you read and you admire and you look up to when they also open up and I see this happen more and more often, and it's a really great thing that they admit that they struggle, they have the same problems, they fear of letting people down or writing something that's maybe not that good, and all those things, it really happens to everyone, literally everyone. When it's something new, when they are doing something new but still in the realm of writing, I just read an article today about Neil Gaiman, who is turning Good Omens, which is one of my all-time favorite books, into a miniseries for Amazon, and he is going to be acting as a showrunner.
That's gonna be so good.
Oh yeah, and moreover, Michael Sheen and David Tennant are set to.
I heard David Tennant was attached to this. I did not know Michael Sheen was as well. Oh, that's gonna be awesome.
Yeah, I mean, the source material is just brilliant. All these people that have been confirmed to be attached to this project are really brilliant. So it's gonna be really good. But he was like. Showrunning is for anyone who doesn't know, it's a mix between a project director, a head writer, a producer. So, but it grew out of the position of a head writer on a TV show, and obviously it is writing, and it is his, at least partially his book. So you would think that he would be, and he's Neil Gaiman. I mean, come on.
Yeah. So you need to say it, really, isn't it?
Yeah. But he was very, very direct and very, very honest about how much fear he has and how unsure about himself he is, because it's still a new thing, and even if it wasn't, you know, it's a new project, so everybody struggles, and it's just, you know, surrounding yourself with people who understand, or at least even if they don't understand, they will support you and try their best to help you out.
Mm-hmm. So definitely
network as much as you can.
And for those of you who are listening to us, if you are on Twitter and you need to try and access some kind of writery community, hashtag writers is usually the best place to go, because pretty much every writer uses that one.
Yeah, and the other is hashtag mwriting.
Ah, yes. Yeah.
And you know, just look over the first 20 tweets. You will see other hashtags you may be interested in.
Yeah.
Speaking of networking, we got a request for someone who wants to come on the show. Which
yes,
warmed
this
our,
was exciting news.
Yes, it warmed our hearts, obviously, we will be in touch with this person, and hopefully we will get him on the show in September. But before I start talking about why this is good, I just want to drop this in here that we are going on a hiatus in August.
An official one this time.
Yes, an official one for about a month or so, because we want to keep doing this podcast and we want to get better at it, and now that we kind of got started and see how it all works and comes together and how much work is it, we decided to take a breather and try to reinforce our foundations. So we have one or maybe two episodes in July following this one, and then we are off for a month and come back stronger and better and more handsome,
older.
Yeah, older. Yeah. I'm not planning on getting older. Well, you know, both of our birthdays are in August. But I was thinking skipping mine. I don't know. I'm not feeling turning 36 this year, so I will just postpone it.
Leave it till next year, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if I feel like it, so I will stay 35 one more year.
I might see if I can kind of age backwards a year this year. That'd be nice.
Yeah, you know, or you know, stop aging at the very least. I mean, you know, maybe you can find some friendly vampires or something. But yeah, getting back to this person who asked us to come on the show, we were very happy and very excited, and obviously we are more than happy to do it. And it's worth mentioning that, you know, if any of you, dear listeners, would like to come on the show and have writery things to talk about, we are very, very open to that.
Absolutely. We are always happy to have guests on.
Yeah, and, you know, the very least, they limit my ability to speak for the whole show. Because I'm also a polite person, and, you know, I let the guests talk. But yeah, what I was thinking, and it's kind of a maybe a little bit of brainstorming, is that we can organize, you know, one of the reasons we are going on hiatus is to figure out the structure of the show. What do we want to talk about, and how do we want to approach it and present it? And one of the ideas I had from the very beginning is to get people in kind of a roundtable format and debate things. So it's not, you know, it shouldn't always be that we are agreeing on everything, because we sometimes disagree. But from that debate, interesting insights and advice could result. What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely.
And yeah, so absolutely, we respect the hustle, we respect the reaching out, and it warms our hearts that someone picked us. So yeah, drop us a line. We have an email, writerings.podcast@gmail.com. And also, all kinds of questions and suggestions and feedback are welcome, either on Twitter or through email or on Anchor, in the format of voice messages. We would love to hear your voice as well.
The links to all of our various places of contact will be in the show notes as per usual.
The other thing that we plan to talk about, and this is kind of a new thing where we don't have a large topic, we just figured that we would free flow it a bit. I have my coffee and a Guinness on ice. I don't know about Martin, but
I am sadly lacking in alcoholic beverages at the moment.
Well, I will drink. No, that's not polite. Well, Guinness goes back to the fridge, and I'm drinking my coffee because, again, I'm a polite person. We wanted to kind of just see the different things that we can just nibble into a little bit and see what works, what doesn't. But one of the topics that we wanted to talk about, or I wanted to talk about, is writing software, which kind of it follows the advice of being productive and being efficient with your time. I know that you are using OpenOffice.
Mm-hmm.
Any thoughts on just how or what people are using to write and why they should, you know, what do you like about OpenOffice, what you don't like, and because there are so many options, and you know, it can be so overwhelming too.
One of the main things that I feel is probably one of the best points about OpenOffice is, of course, the fact that it's free. So you can just download it from the internet. It's not nefarious. It's not going to kill your computer in various horrible ways. I have honestly found it to be just as good, if not better, than using Microsoft's Office or Microsoft Word, as the case may be. OpenOffice, it gives you quite a lot of variety about which sort of file types you're actually creating. So even if you're just doing your standard text documents or writing books, writing novels, whatever you're writing, you can save it in a number of different file types, which is extremely useful because there are various different companies or organizations or places where you can publish your book that want different file types to be sent to them. So you've actually got quite a lot of flexibility in where how you format it, and that allows you to send it to a wider range of places for publishing.
It's maybe worth mentioning that you know, as a writer, you don't need much in terms of equipment. You don't even need a computer. Neal Stephenson famously longhands his novels, which is quite an impressive feat, looking at, you know, the 1,000 pages of books that that he wrote. But that, you know, computers make your life easier, and writing software makes your life easier. What I find interesting about OpenOffice, and that applies to Microsoft Word as well, but you know, I prefer OpenOffice to Microsoft Office as well. But what I find it interesting is that doesn't it get, especially when you are writing something quite long, that editing and kind of segmenting stuff, it gets a little cumbersome?
Honestly, I'm not sure I'd know. I'm not really sure of the kind of things you've been doing that where you've kind of encountered that kind of issue.
Well, you know, when you load a long document, you know, it's just,
yeah,
simply just finding something, or, you know, it's just I'm guessing you use bookmarks and stuff like that to kind of segment out the document.
No.
Okay. Well, you know, then, you know.
Usually I just kind of scroll through it until I find the bit I'm looking for.
Well, the more power to you, because, you know, I just the software I'm using is called Ulysses, it's bad news for anyone who doesn't use a Mac, because it's Apple exclusive.
Well, we all have our sister bear.
Yeah. it's a writing software in a similar vein as Scrivener, which at the very least, you know, what I think, what I find more
most useful about these very specific writing softwares is that organizing your stuff and kind of breaking it down into chunks that are more manageable is much easier. I still prefer Ulysses's way of because I write a lot of different things for clients mostly, but even in my own fiction work, it uses a directory approach. So I open the app and it's all there. It's I can work on anything, as opposed to with OpenOffice or Scrivener or what have you, which is a project based thing. Is that you have to open the specific file that you want to work on, and it saves me so much time that on the left hand side I just have all my work. And but both Scrivener and Ulysses have these. In Ulysses, they are called sheets, and they can be as long or as short as you want, and you can string them together and all that good stuff. But it's I find that it's much more easier to segment my workout and find what I'm looking for, as opposed to having a whole novel in one single document and scrolling it through.
Yeah, I guess a part of it is kind of what you're used to, as opposed to venturing out and finding and trying different systems to find what's what could make it even more efficient. I'm used to the way OpenOffice works, and I'm content with it. It does what I need it to do, and I know where things are that I need. Because, there are probably tools that I don't use that could make my life a little bit easier or more convenient, but I've never used them before, so I don't feel their loss, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. And you're absolutely right. Use whatever works for you. And I know that I've spent months, if not years, trying out different software, and that's in retrospect I don't mind, because I found Ulysses, but it can be viewed as a waste of time, and like we said, you don't need much to be a writer. You can use a notepad on your computer and happily be a best-selling author. But it is there are so many options, and some of them are offering features that built-in plotting or structuring tools, like with a virtual corkboard in Scrivener. That's pretty neat feature, actually, and I'm fascinated with how physical things can be turned into digital concepts. Do you use kind of a corkboard or whiteboard or something or other for plotting and kind of background stuff?
No, I am what they refer to as a pantser. Right by the seat of my pants. I do have a notepad app on my phone for those moments where I'm out and about and I just get struck with a sudden flash of inspiration and I'm like, oh my god, I need to make a note of this right now. I'll make notes on my phone, but when it comes to like full-on overarching plots and things like that, no, it just stays either in my head or on my notes. And
right.
Yeah, it just stays there until I actually get it down on the paper, down on the page.
On that note, and I apologize for the pun.
No, you don't.
No, I don't. Always keep at least one notepad next to your bed, folks. And, you know, just use your phone or whatever. Never, ever, ever assume that you are going to remember something.
Oh, yes.
That's just the worst self-delusion a writer could have. This is such a great idea. I will surely remember it. No.
That happened to me so many times when I was writing my first novel. Both the whole, I've got to remember this idea because, it's absolutely fantastic. I'll definitely remember it. It's not going to be a problem. Yeah, that didn't happen. Also, not having a notepad or something readily available in the middle of the night when I was... It's a common joke, and yet it's a very accurate one, that writers get their best ideas about 45 seconds before they fall asleep.
Precisely.
And yeah, the amount of times that happened to me writing my first book as well, trying to get to sleep, tossing and turning, agonizing over a particular scene, and then suddenly, like a flash of lightning, I just get this amazing idea, and there's no notepad anywhere to be seen, and I'm like, fuck it, I'm really tired, and I know I'm going to remember this because it's such a great idea. I'm definitely going to remember it. My head hits the pillow, I wake up again the next morning, I can't even remember what happened for the last 2 weeks.
Right. Yes. So, definitely anything you do and anything comes to your head, write it down. Write it down.
Yes. Always write it down.
Yes.
Also, I'm debating whether or not I need to apologize for the slightly unprofessional swearing there, but...
I don't
know how professional we're being on this podcast.
We are absolutely professionals. I don't think that profanity excludes professionalism. And, you know, if you apologize, then, you know, I still don't feel bad because I've been using some bad words in the past episodes. So,
oh, well, in that case, what the fuck? Who cares?
We just set the podcast to explicit, and I don't think that many under 18s or sensitive people are listening to this, and I don't think that writing is particularly for the faint-hearted, because you know if you are not swearing at your characters and yelling at your screen, then you know. Maybe you're doing something right and we are doing something wrong, but...
The other thing you're likely to be swearing at is your own brain and as you batter your head against the computer screen.
Yeah, and, you know...
Why? Why give me ideas?
Yeah, and then, you know, but like we established, what you can do is just go to bed and 45 seconds before you fall asleep, everything... gets into their place.
Yep.
And then you have 45 seconds to write it down, so keep a notepad.
Always keep a notepad handy, even if it's an app on your phone, an actual notepad, whatever it takes, keep one nearby.
Speaking of, how do you feel about dictation?
Never used it myself in the past, so... I don't really have an opinion one way or the other. Are you on about speech to text?
Yeah. I'm thinking eliminating the friction between having the idea and recording the idea, and even if it's a very minimal friction, finding your notepad, always keep it handy. But finding your notepad and writing it down is a friction, as opposed to, you know, just starting to talk out loud.
Maybe. I'm terrible at dictating, even just dictating a text message to someone. So that's not going to work for me.
Right. And obviously, you know, you need the people around you to kind of be accepting or get used to it or whatever, because, you know, when your significant other and you are kind of in bed and you just about to fall asleep and you start dictating, that's kind of a weird thing.
Yeah. You also need to shut up.
Oh, yeah.
You're going to be dictating. And especially with a family, that's not going to happen.
Yeah, you know, try telling a kid to shut up, and that's a surefire way of getting them not to shut up.
Yes.
I'm told. I don't know. I don't have kids yet, or that I know of. Yeah, dictation was kind of it's kind of an interesting thing, because, you know, you kind of used to people typing away on their laptops and whatnot in coffee houses and stuff like that. By the way, if you are writing, please, you know, maybe don't do it in the coffee house so pretentiously, because, you know, it's.
Why do you say that's pretentious? Because
I'm not saying.
I know a couple of authors on Twitter that do that.
I mean, I do that. I'm not saying writing in a coffee shop is pretentious.
Oh, it's the way they're doing it in a pretentious fashion.
Yeah, exactly. That you can write in a coffee shop very pretentiously. That doesn't really do anything for your writing, but at least it lets everybody else know that you.
How do you write pretentiously exactly? I know what pretentious writing looks like, but how do you do the action of writing in a pretentious fashion? What are you going on about?
Have you ever walked into a coffee shop?
On numerous occasions.
Where well, surprise, surprise. But there are one or two people in a lot of coffee shops that I've been to who have their laptop out, and it's kind of they are kind of typing harder than a normal person would, and like looking around and huffing and puffing and, you know, just making everybody around them know that they are writing the next big American novel.
No, I really can't notice people doing that.
It's such a thing, not just in my experience, but in others, as well, that, Scalzi, wrote a book. Well, he's running a blog, a daily blog, called The Whatever, and, bookful of posts he titled "You Are Not Fooling Anyone When You Take Your Laptop to the Coffee Shop," and it's full of, like, Scalzi is a great writer, and he's a non-nonsense writer, so he doesn't romanticize writing. And he has incredible insight into writing, and it's a book really worth reading.
He also crafts the most insane burritos.
That too. So anyone who wants to get a very practical approach to writing advice, I definitely recommend that book. What do you think about, you know, romanticizing writing? Is it something good that, like, kind of motivates people that and makes them feel special, or is it something that kind of hinders the whole thing? Because
I think it's a bit of both, to be honest. I mean, I think obviously some people will be lured to the craft of writing by the romantic notion of being this writer and you know, being cooped up in their little country cottage somewhere and just writing for 18 hours a day with nothing but coffee and noodles to survive on. And at the end of it all, at the end of like 5 years or something, they end up creating something that's going to go out into the world and earn them lots of cash. It doesn't work like that. We all know this. The romantic notion is nice to keep in your brain and just, you know, think on wistfully. But if you think that's definitely going to be how it is, then you're in for a big shock. Writing is hard. It is a trial every single time you sit down in front of that computer or in front of that notepad. It is a trial. You've got so many things to contend with. You've got all these ideas crashing into your brain, and half of them aren't even related to the story you're trying to write at the moment. I know from experience. And you've got 1,000 different types of pressure, and it's a difficult thing to do. And for the people who can do it successfully and who have been very successful with their books, then yeah, it's an amazing thing. But it's never going to be an easy job, especially when there's the vast majority of society that doesn't see it as a job.
Everybody's a writer because everybody can, you know, put words together, and that's not what writing is. But yeah, you're absolutely right. The romantic notion of you are the writer, capital T, capital W, you know, creator of worlds and overlord of good and evil and all that stuff. It's useful it's only useful when you are in the dirt trying to, you know, just piece it together and trying to survive the chapter that you were writing. Then, you know, like taking a step back, looking around and kind of getting satisfaction from the fact that you are in fact a writer, that's something that's useful. Otherwise it will do you no good if you think that writing is some kind of magic, or because, you know, finishing a book and making it so that it looks like magic to the reader, that's hard work. And that's all it is. It's not so, you need talent, definitely you need talent, but most of it is just work and it's skill, and that skill can be acquired, that can be improved, that can and it needs to be applied, and it is, you know, it is work.
Yeah, but something else that should also be said is, yes, it is hard work, but it's also a very special kind of work. It's got to be said, because it is the closest thing we can come to actually being to actually using magic. I mean, we take nothingness and we can craft people and worlds and situations and so many things out of just raw nothingness and bring it to life on a page. That's a special talent, that is. It's a phenomenal thing that all of us, all writers have. And that's something we also need to just look at ourselves and go, God damn, we have got some fucking amazing talent. We are superheroes.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. It's a special thing. It's an awesome thing.
Yes, it is.
Whenever I say that I'm a writer, everybody assumes I'm a fiction writer, which is kind of good because it keeps my ego down.
It also keeps people on their toes when you go, actually, no.
But I just wanted to mention that writing is writing, whether you write fiction or nonfiction. And this is to all my copywriter
bros and sisters out there who are doing the same thing in with a different purpose or a different goal, but yeah, at the end of the day, it's our job to create magic, and that's really special. I couldn't be happier that I get to do this as a job.
I think what people forget about nonfiction writing is that the thing it shares most with fiction writing is it's still got to capture the reader. Because if the writing itself doesn't grab the reader and draw them in, they're just going to throw the book away and use it as a doorstop or something. Because let's face it, nonfiction books do tend to be massive.
And they do tend to be, because you know, fiction writing is still has that kind of barrier of, you know, coming up with stuff that didn't exist before. While everybody thinks that, you know, nonfiction writers are horrible at their jobs, and many are, and I read my share of nonfiction books that are useless. And it's because this approach that this different approach that nonfiction is somehow different from fiction writing. You still have to tell a story, you still have to structure it, and you still have to make it captivating, as you said. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you know, and it does kind of, it is missing from many nonfiction books, because nonfiction, you know, it's kind of looked down upon, and it shouldn't be. It's just my two cents.
It's absolutely true.
What was I going to say next? I mean, we arrived at this point in the broadcast when I am speechless.
Wow, that never happens. In fact, on numerous occasions, I wish we'd have arrived at this point.
Well, thank you for that. I appreciate
it. That's quite all right.
I appreciate the support. I'm out. I'm actually speechless.
So we are going to officially note this as the day we finally broke Greg.
Okay, great. I don't know what I'm doing now.
I think I had an idea, but that kind of went walkies. So I don't know.
It's just me.
Okay. No, it's infectious, is what it is. This is fun.
Well, I don't know how fun it is for listeners. Maybe we should, you know, end the episode here.
Quite possibly.
We broke mead. We broke me. We don't get any higher than that.
Yeah, I think that is pretty much the high point of the show. Yeah, so we need to. Yeah, I think we should probably close it off for today.
You wanna do the honors of the end of show housekeeping?
I never get to do the honors. Yeah, let's do that. Okay.
Hold on. You did it last time.
Yes, once.
Well, then you know, then that's not never. And you know, this is second in a row. So let's not start rumors, Martin. Let's not start rumors.
Anyway, as usual, there will be all the links to Greg's Twitter and my Twitter individually, as well as the Writerings podcast Twitter account. They will be in the show notes. Feel free to get in touch with us at any of those places. We are always happy to hear from people. We're always happy to get feedback or any ideas for conversation topics, or even if you want to be a guest on the show, by all means drop us a line and we'd love to get you on to talk about you. We do also have an email, writerings@dod.podcast@gmail.com. So drop us a line there as well. You can leave us a voice message on Anchor. So there's that too. we'd love to hear from you, no matter what it is you've got to say. As you can tell, we're quite used to just brain farting, really. So if you want to do the same, go right ahead.
That was a pun. Go right ahead. That was nice. That was
yes, fun. Yes, yes. Well, it was completely intentional. I did not have any idea of what I wasn't saying or anything. That was completely intentional. Yes, definitely. That's my story. I'm sticking with it.
And yeah, that's our show, I think. We will speak to you next week for the how is it said properly? Second to last. Yeah.
Second to last. Well done.
Second to last show in the season. And thank you for listening. Bye. Yes.
Thank you very much. Goodbye.